keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this,
for dreams. We're pursuing. Thank you all for tuning in. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.com/radio. Really happy to be back alive and well on this Monday, April 30th, last day of the month. A lot of stuff happening, a lot of stuff on foreign policy. We're going to try to touch on several different topics tonight. Nothing super scripted here. I guess we're just going to kind of go at it with some fluidity, I guess. We're working on just an update on where we're at. We're working on securing this crypto funding just because the Facebook and Google revenue has kind of been drying up, as you guys well know. I've been talking about this a lot. Corporate censorship, we're trying to break through this all. And I still can't tell you guys about the big, big news coming, but pretty soon I will be able to, maybe by the end of next month. And so just stay tuned for that. And then a couple other things ideas I've been working on. We are planning on moving the entire website onto a blockchain, which will probably be the Steemit blockchain. So imagine if you already have a Steemit account, or if you don't, you can create one, and you'll be able to kind of comment on our articles via your Steam account. And if you make like a clever comment or whatever, and it gets a bunch of upvotes, you could actually make money by commenting on our website. I mean, we're not paying you, but you're getting paid by being part of the Steam ecosystem. I don't know exactly how that works because it's really technical, but I know that we're making money on Steemit right now. I mean, one of our posts the other day made $100, so you know that's pretty cool. And then you know, everyone will have an account. You'll kind of be able to start building up a how would you say? I guess it's like a reputation. You'll get like a ranking and all that. So the more comments, the more things you do on the site, you'll build more and more points or whatever. It's kind of like a game system, I guess you could say. And then, you know, people that submit the links to the My News section, you get, if you submit really good stories, you get a bunch of upvotes. Also, you'll be able to make some money. Now, you know, we're not talking about making a full-time job or anything, but, you know, you can make, I don't know, $20-$30 a month or something like that. And what other news site's going to pay you to be using it, you know? And, again, we're not, it's not us paying you, but it's just part of this Steemit ecosystem. But so that's a pretty interesting development that we're going to be working on, hopefully over the next like 4 months or so. It's going to be pretty expensive to get that done. So first we have to secure this crypto funding, and then we're going to start working on that. And once we have that done, we're going to start looking at opening the company up to investment from our readers and our workers are going to get a small ownership, small percentage of ownership of the company. So we're going to be a community-owned, worker-owned news outlet built on the blockchain. So, and that is just on top of what we already do, which is kind of this crowd-curated news site, which is pretty unique that not many other sites are doing right now. So we got some interesting plans moving forward on the business end of things, and you know, I'm going to be putting some people, elevating some of our team members into more influential roles, and as far as on the editorial side of things, and really just advancing our content to the next level, which all is just waiting. We're just waiting on this crypto funding. Hopefully it comes through, and we're going to be better than ever. And we're going to be able to look back and say, you know what, we survived the Facebook apocalypse. We came out of it stronger on the other side, more robust. And I think maybe by this time next year, we will be a standalone news site that is not beholden to anybody. You know, we won't be beholden to Facebook. We won't be beholden to Google. We won't be beholden to Twitter or Reddit or any of these assholes who feel the need to control content and limit the flow of information. If everything works out the way I'm hoping, I think the anti-media really has a good chance of becoming kind of like a Drudge Report of independent media without the kind of left-right bias that the Drudge Report has. And, you know, like Huffington Post, which I guess is the main left-wing competitor to Drudge, you know, obviously far, you know, Huffington Post is in the pocket of the Democratic Party, Drudge Report is in the pocket of the Republican Party. And we're going to compete with both of them from a nonpartisan perspective, which, as you know, that's what we do. That's what we do here. But as of now, we still rely on these external factors to keep our business going. And hopefully we're going to change that. And that's what I'm going to be working on over, of course, the next few months, but also over the next year. And hopefully this other big news comes through for us and really changes it all up for us. And, you know, that's where we're at right now. Once again, thanks to all of our supporters on Patreon. Couldn't do it without you. I haven't been able to secure the Patreon rewards yet, but I'm going to do that as soon as the crypto funding comes through, because we're like broke as hell right now. But as soon as that comes through, we're going to get some shirts made, and we already got the design done, and we're going to be sending out stickers and stuff to everybody that supports us. But thank you all for just rolling with us through all this, you know, these crazy times, man. I mean, there's never been a time where the need for a free press has been more urgent than we have right now. And of course, it coincides with the Facebook apocalypse and all these other assholes trying to censor us. It coincides with all this other shit going on foreign policy, and anybody that questions the narrative has been branded a Russian operative. And that's all part of the machine's effort to delegitimize us and cut us off. You know, first they dehumanize us by calling us Russian operatives, and then they're like, well, we could just, you know, Facebook and Google could just cut these guys off, you know, no big deal. And under normal circumstances, people would be like, well, that's not acceptable. That's infringing on speech. But then they're like, well, they're Russian, so, you know, we can just do that. And they're, oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, go ahead and just totally cut them off. So, you know, that's part of their triangulation and their 4D chess, I guess you could say. I don't think Trump is so much playing that 4D chess, but these assholes that are running the show, they definitely are. And this, all this Russia stuff was just to get that control over the narrative that they briefly lost control of in the 2016 election. And I proudly can say that we helped hijack the narrative, and we helped disrupt what was supposed to happen. And I'm proud of that. And it may not be a desired outcome. I mean, by disrupting the establishment in 2016 doesn't mean that we won by getting Donald Trump elected. I wanted Donald Trump to lose just as bad as I wanted Hillary Clinton to lose. The fact of the matter is, one of these assholes were going to win. And by disrupting it, you can see that these guys went into a panic mode, and the mainstream media declared war on fucking free speech and the First Amendment, ironically. And, you know, that's what this whole battle is about. Everyone wants to talk about it's this, it's that, it's fake news, it's this, it's that. No, it's none of that shit. These guys lost control of their narrative. What happened wasn't what was supposed to happen, and now they're in panic mode trying to clean up the mess.
And we're getting ready for a big war.
Yeah, and I'm proud to say that we are not going to keel over and die. We are going to whoop the shit out of these motherfuckers, and we're going to beat them, and we're going to win. We're going to beat them at their own game. And, you know, I think if this crypto money comes through, you know, cryptocurrency, independent media, uncensorable media, dude, we are going to change the world together. We may go through some frustrating times, like over the last few months. It's been very frustrating. Ever since the election, it's been very frustrating. But in the end, I think good will prevail over evil. Decentralization will prevail over centralization. And these assholes can only keep us down for so long. And it's like that old Bob Marley quote. You can fool some of the people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. But, you know, sometimes they fool enough people to get stupid shit to happen. They do.
They've been doing it. That's why wars have been able to be manufactured. But I think now the internet backfired on them. They wanted to use it to track dissidents. But they didn't realize that the mass of humanity worldwide wasn't quite as stupid and dumbed down as they thought they were.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, we're going to overcome these assholes with the technology that maybe they built. And they just, you know, all technologies, like most other things, can be used for good or for bad. You know, the internet can be used for good, could be used for bad. Cars, good, bad. Weapons, good, bad. You know, voting could be used for good and for bad. But I think who was it that said the curve of history trends toward justice? Or, you know, I don't know if that's an exact quote. It may have been Martin Luther King. Not sure. But I think that's correct. And because the people, the general population, 98% of us, 99% of us, we're all the same. No matter what country you're from, no matter what religion you are, no matter where you live, you basically want to live free, to have food, to have water, to have comfort, to have fun. I mean, we all kind of want the same thing. I don't care if you're Saudi Arabian. I don't care if you're Mexican. I don't care if you live in the U.S. Everybody pretty much wants something, you know, similar. They want to live a happy life and be free to do what they want, practice their own religion, have their own thoughts. And these assholes keep getting in the way and trying to make us hate each other and make us go to war for each other. And that's been how, you know, that's been how the world's been operating for a long time. I think we're ready to disrupt that. And I think that's also why they've been trying to censor our media, because they know that we're on the verge of disrupting that shit. Because in 2013, they've seen our power. They saw when we stopped the regime change in Syria. They saw us do that. Now, they still got into Syria by playing some games with pretend like they're fighting ISIS and all that shit. But they know our power, and they know they got to stop, and that's why these dudes have declared war on us, and we're going to beat them. But enough of that. Enough of what we're going through.
You know what's interesting, though, just to keep on that bent for a second, is I was talking to this dude who's 20, and he was telling me that he's like, man, they're not going to be able to make us go to war this time. He's like, nobody's going to go to war. He's like, we don't even want the Second Amendment, some of us. How are they going to get us to pick up a gun?
Seriously, dude. They're gonna, you know what? Just send all the politicians' kids off to war, maybe the following generation will be a lot more peaceful. That being said, we are on some big shit on war. Now, I think as of the last show, the North Korea stuff hadn't happened yet. That, or maybe it was kind of, we were just starting to find out what was going to happen. North Korea is
starting to. What do you make of that, Nick?
Well,
you think it had to do with the meltdown, or you think it had to do with people finally were like freaking sick of it?
I think a little bit of everything. So yeah, there's been reports that North Korea's main nuclear research facility actually literally collapsed. And those reports seem to be pretty legit. There still isn't any official word on that, but I think they're just basing it on like surveillance or like aerial surveillance, you know, satellite surveillance and that kind of stuff. So those seem to be like legitimate reports that North Korea's nuclear facility collapsed. So I think we have some very convenient timing here, because as we know, the North and South Korean relations have been doing really well ever since the Olympics. The Olympics kind of brought them together. You remember they kind of came out with a unified team and they marched under the same banner, and they've been kind of friendly ever since. There's been state visits back and forth. And then just, I'm trying to remember when that was, like Friday, I think, Thursday, Friday, North and South Korean leaders actually met each other face-to-face for the first time in a long time. It had been like 10 years or something, I think, since the last time that happened. And now they're saying they're going to end the war. You know, and there's been previous moments in recent history where the North and South met and they're like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to try to get along and we're going to try to be cool with each other. But then after a while, it went back to the same old, you know, fear-mongering, war propaganda and shit like that. But this time, it's pretty big because they're both saying that they're actually going to end the war. And so what we're talking about now is a deconfliction, right, and maybe a demilitarization. Mattis said today that if North Korea decided to give up their nuclear weapons, that pulling U.S. troops out of South Korea is on the table. So, you know, maybe we'll see the troops come home from South Korea. That'd be a great development. Now, the troubling thing, you got John Bolton's fucking warmongering ass up there in the Trump administration saying, oh, yeah, we're going to use the Libya model for how to deal with North Korea and how they got rid, you know, had Gaddafi get rid of his nuclear weapons. Now, what the hell, what happened to Gaddafi after he got rid of his nuclear weapons? Well, we all know Gaddafi's dead now. They went and overthrew him. So that's a really stupid of John Bolton. Maybe smart. Maybe his whole goal is to derail the peace process, which is probably what he's actually trying to do, because that asshole hasn't seen a war that he's ever disagreed with, right? And keep in mind, that dude never served himself either. He's a chicken hawk. He never went and fought. He doesn't know what it's fucking like. He just thinks that people should go die so his buddies can make a bunch of money. That's really all he's about. But he's over there saying, oh yeah, we can use the Libyan model and how we got them to denuclearize. Dude, don't say that. That's stupid as fuck, because Libya should have never gotten rid of its nuclear weapons, because if they hadn't, well, Libya would probably be still a country that people could actually live in peacefully in Africa, right? Now Libya is a total nightmare. There's just basically a civil war unfolding right there. The media don't talk about it because the media helped cheer it on when Obama went over there and toppled Gaddafi. So they don't. They just kind of ignore it because they'd rather talk about Syria and how bad Russia and Iran are. But nobody wants to talk about how fucked up the situation in Libya is, because we're actually responsible for it. It's shit that we do, our allies, you know, France and Britain helped mess up Libya, and the media didn't want to talk about it, right? They just want to talk about Benghazi when the Democrats were still in power. Have you noticed that the Benghazi shit all went away now that there's a Republican as president? Yeah, that's all. That was all bullshit, and the Benghazi thing was very much kind of like the whole Russiagate thing, where it's just partisan-based nonsense for them to build up votes and get, you know, it's like, oh, well, we're not only running against Republicans in 2018, we're also running against Putin. And that's kind of like I think that's the strategy the Democrats are leaning on.
They did. They definitely did in real life leave those dudes hanging out to dry.
Oh, yeah, they definitely did. And we would never get the truth about Benghazi, because then you would find out much more dirt than these guys want anyone to know about, which involves, you know, the CIA running guns, you know, from Libya into Syria and a bunch of other shady shit that was going on over there. And then we're now finding out about fucking Sarkozy. That guy, the biggest douchebag in recent European history, I guess. I'm ashamed that he shares the first name, you know, shares my first name. But this dude took... I think I read it was $20 million he took from Gaddafi to run his campaign for president, and then he gets elected, and then he goes and fucking goes and kills Gaddafi. He took his money and then killed him. I mean, this guy's a big-time douchebag, and he not only that, but he broke a bunch of – if the accusations are true, he broke a bunch of French campaign laws and stuff, and so he may be going to jail. We'll see. Sarkozy, man, big asshole. But anyway, overall, I'm pretty positive about what's going on in North Korea. I think there's a good chance for peace. And I think, of course, the elephant in the room is China. And I think the reason why nothing has really happened to North Korea in a long time is basically because China's over there. And, you know, we've mentioned this before on the show. The last time the U.S. came into direct conflict with China, in fact, maybe the only time the U.S. came into direct military conflict with China, was during the Korean War, when the U.S. had almost beaten, I forget what they were called before they were called North Korea, but the U.S. almost almost beat them, and then China stepped in and pushed them back down to where they're at now, where the north and south border line is now. You know, China is what intervened and changed all that. So I think the reason why nothing has happened in North Korea, like the way that we did Libya, the way that we did Iraq and all that, it's because if you look at those countries that the U.S. goes and just goes and fucks these countries up, is they don't have any big allies, right? And that's the same reason I think why Obama may have backed, also another reason why Obama may have backed off of going and toppling the Syrian government, was because he knew that Russia was going to have their back and he didn't want to get, you know, too involved in that. And he would rather leave it as a proxy war than go and heads up with, you know, with Russia. Same thing with North Korea. I don't think the U.S. can really do anything because that would mean we go heads up with China. And the whole world, you know, doesn't want to see that, and it'd be a big mess. So pretty positive on that. What do you make of it, dude?
I don't know, dude. Somebody's got to be the next boogeyman, and I feel like a lot of these countries are proxy countries for the CIA, so I think the military is just mopping them up now. I mean, I'm still in 100% agreement of my original hypothesis that the military installed Trump. They're taking over. This has happened throughout history where the men with the guns take over from the men with the money. It happens all the time. It's a normal, natural cycle. And it usually culminates with a war or starts with one. So I just hope that these guys understand with the technology now that these wars are not gonna like leave anybody unscathed. I don't care if you're going into dumbs. I don't care if you're going off planet. Even they're gonna be able to get you if you're fighting one of these three superpowers that we know of. And then people forget they never consider Japan. Japan is probably at a higher technology level than we are in a lot of ways. So there's really four superpowers. Maybe there's even a hidden one. Who the hell knows? And yeah, man, everybody can decimate populations and hit underground bases. Like, it's not an issue. So
yeah, and India and Pakistan are India and Pakistan are both kind of like sleeping giants because they don't really do anything external. They're mostly dealing with internal conflict.
Don't forget Israel, though.
Yeah, and Israel too.
Israel can blow the whole world up and be fine.
Yeah. So yeah, there's just too many big players, and nuclear technology has changed the game, and you can't just go and have conventional wars anymore and expect the world to survive. You know, you start a big war nowadays, the whole world may get consumed by it for the first time in history. You know, that's been the case in previous times. You know, World War One, World War Two, when these big wars pop off, they remain regional, and it's like, you know, how many guys are gonna go fight and get gunned down, you know, maybe a few million. But we're at this point in history where these assholes could actually destroy the whole world and take all of us and all the animals and all the life, you know, all the life on this planet with them. You know, I think if there was some kind of major war like that, you know, the Earth continues on, the world doesn't end, but maybe it'll only be bacteria and cockroaches and small, very small animals that actually survive through it. And you know, human beings wind up getting the short end of the deal, and we wipe ourselves out. So the whole thing is different now. And like you said, DB, you're right, dude. There is a new boogeyman on the block, and it's an old boogeyman, but it's the pressure is renewed. Iran. I don't know if you saw today, Netanyahu out there spreading the fear mongering about Iran, saying they violated the nuclear agreement and stuff. Most of these countries in Europe are trying to keep the Iran deal in place, including France. You know, France, Macron just participated in the bombing of Syria. France just sent troops into Syria as well. And but Macron and Trump do not agree on the Iran deal. Trump and Bolton and all of Trump's handlers and stuff want to scrap the deal because, as you said, we need a boogeyman. Iran is the boogeyman that they've been using ever since we it's ironic. Ever since we toppled their government.
They're on that list, aren't they, Nick?
Yeah, they're on the list of seven.
There you go. So, I mean, it never stopped. And by toppling all those countries, you create a position where Russia and China are neutered and have nowhere to go. They just become, they create their own iron curtains. And then the U.S. dominates world trade by proxy and becomes Japan's lapdog, essentially, because Japan owes all of our debt. owns it all. They own 70% of it, dude. So China's nothing. They're peanuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Netanyahu was up there today talking about how Iran is still working on its nuclear program and how Iran's trying to build a nuclear bomb. Now, keep in mind, Netanyahu has been saying this shit, like, literally for, like, I gotta pull it up. Hold on. I gotta pull this up because this is ridiculous.
Since 1999, I think.
Maybe even older. Hold on. I have an article on it here. If you guys want to check this article out, it's from 2015 by S.M. Gibson. Benjamin Netanyahu, The Boy Who Cried Wolf. That's the title of it. 1992, when Netanyahu was a member of the Israeli parliament, said that Iran was only 3 to 5 years away from developing and securing nuclear arms. And he also said the U.S. needed to intervene. In Netanyahu's book, 1995, called Fighting Terrorism, he wrote that Iran was 5 to 7 years at most from possessing a nuclear facility. In 1996, speaking to the U.S. Congress, he said that only the United States can lead the vital international effort to stop nuclearization of terrorist states, but the deadline for attaining this goal is getting extremely close. So in the article, again, it's from 2015, it's been 19 years since he started warning about this stuff. So 19, that would be like, it's been like 22 years that he's been saying Iran is like 5 years away from having a nuclear weapon. 2009, Netanyahu said that Iran was only 1 to 2 years away from gaining nuclear devices. So basically,
probably had it the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, either they did, or this dude has just been fear-mongering out of his ass forever. And whichever, I don't know which one is worse. Maybe Iran already does have them, and that's the deterrent, the reason why we haven't gone and toppled them yet.
I'm sure they have them. I mean, Iran's the Persian Empire, dude. It's not like they were that far behind Babylon and whatever the hell else was around at that time.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it would make sense that they'd already have them. But there's a chance they don't. We don't have any proof. And by now, you'd think there had been whistleblowers that would kind of blow the whistle on it. But who knows? It's hard to say. They have been defectors.
Well, don't they keep dying, though? Like, don't they keep getting shot by guys on, like, the back of bikes and shit?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, the Israelis have been assassinating their scientists for a long time. Whenever you hear about an Israeli Iranian scientist getting killed, most times it's the Mossad, and they roll up on motorcycles with two dudes, and one dude has an Uzi and blasts a dude, and then they just drive off. They don't get caught. so yeah, Netanyahu is fear mongering. Trump is planning. He keeps saying he's going to end the nuclear agreement. They're getting a lot of pressure from our allies in Europe again because the Europeans. I'm starting to think that it's a matter of geography and that the Europeans know that if there's some big shit that pops off, like they're all, a bunch of them are going to die once again, just like they have in most of these other big wars, because that's the theater, right? The U.S., the reason why the U.S., I think, and especially I think American citizens too, the reason that they don't oppose wars as much as maybe people in, let's say, Germany or France may oppose them, it's because when was the last time the U.S. had a battle on its own shores? I mean, there's nobody living. Everyone that's ever fought on U.S. soil in a war is already dead. No one even remembers, like, you know, and no one remembers that stuff. And then even the wars that were fought here we learn about them in some kind of glorious, you know, thing where it's like, oh, yeah, the Civil War when freedom triumphed over evil and all that stuff. When it was much more complicated than that. And all these other wars, you know, there's the U.S. war in Cuba, the U.S. war against Mexico, and there's been wars closer to home, but there hasn't been one on U.S. soil in a very, very long time. So I think Americans are partially apathetic because of that, and because there's no draft, and because American troops are no longer dying because we've automated a lot of the foreign policy, and the drones do a lot of the dirty work now. Americans kind of just sit by the wayside, whatever, dude. If we blow up a wedding party in Yemen, no big deal. I mean, shit, we ain't dying. And those Muslim people are basically subhuman. That's what we're taught, right? That's what the propaganda tells us. Muslims are terrorists, and a terrorist is subhuman. So whatever, they die, they die. And so I think the reality of war is just not there. The maybe the last time that America really realized the real brutality of war was in Vietnam, when all those guys went over there and got mangled and good media coverage where some journalists embedded in over there in Vietnam documented some of these, you know, massacres, and there was whistleblowers that came forward documenting this stuff, and that's what helped turn the public against it in the draft. Everyone's getting drafted. I'm sure most Americans have, if you're any rich, you got a person in your family that's been drafted before. I know I do. I mean, if you're rich like Donald Trump, you're rich like fucking any of these other asshole politicians, yeah, maybe you never had to go to war because your parents bought you out of it. But all the working class people, man, everyone's got someone in their family been drafted. Or if not drafted, volunteered. And that changes the sentiment. When a bunch of people are affected by it, all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, my brother got drafted. Like, all of a sudden I give a shit about this war going on in fucking North Korea, or, you know, for instance, in Iran. Like, some big war pops off in Iran, it's like, oh shit, we got to start the draft up. My brother's got to go fight. All of a sudden I give a shit, right? All of a sudden it's like, damn, dude, should I really support this war? My brother's going to go fight over there. Is he going to fucking die? Maybe then people would care. But for now, I think that it's an uphill battle for us covering these foreign policy topics from an anti-empire standpoint, because people are just unaffected by it. They're not actually unaffected by it, because we're affected in ways that you just aren't realizing by, in one way, paying for it, paying a bunch of money for this shit. $60,000 is what, you know, probably higher now, $70,000 what a kid is born with to pay for this fucking empire. Every kid that's born, they're in the hole for this fucking empire, $70,000. And I think I just read that each American on average pays about $3,000 a year to the Pentagon, I believe, is what I just recently read. $3,000 a year out of your paycheck goes to fight these wars. And so the reason people don't really know about it is because the media just pretends like this stuff ain't happening. And for people like us who want to raise awareness of this stuff, well, the censorship comes into place. And it's like, oh, yeah, you guys want to talk shit about the empire? You ain't going to reach nobody. But as things get worse, and if these guys do something with Iran and cause a big-ass war, well, then more and more people are going to start reading our website, and more people are going to start questioning this shit, and more people are going to say, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be doing this. What the hell are we doing in Iran anyway? Going after the oil? You know, maybe people start looking at it, you know, asking those questions.
It's not like we could ever get it either. I don't think people get that if we fight Iran openly, if it's not like something that just happens behind the scenes, they can shut down that strait and, I mean, set the whole oil fields on fire. I mean, you want to see your gas bill double, there you go.
Yeah, and today after the Iran... after the Netanyahu nonsense, fearmonger about Iran, oil prices spiked up. So yeah, oil prices are already going up in anticipation for this. And yeah, if that shit happens, good luck, dude. Oil prices are going to go through the roof. That may be part of what these guys are trying to do. You know, could be part of it.
It's just an extra auxiliary bonus. I mean, I think they've been ready for a while that if they have their big war, that whatever remains of humanity is going to not need oil after. Like, they'll bring the actual tech that we have capable of bringing up to the surface out. Like, I think they're just hoarding shit right now, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, think about it. Things haven't really improved much since, like, I mean, in all honesty, if you take out computers, things are pretty much the same since post-World War II.
Yeah, and now thinking about it in another way, who would oil prices hurt the most? Well, that's an easy one. China. China doesn't have its own oil. It's the largest importer of oil. And if oil prices go up, China is pretty much fucked. I know they are starting to secure their own oil. They're starting to buy oil rights in Africa and stuff, but not nearly enough to keep up with demand. And China would get severely screwed. As would Japan in a lesser way. But if you think about leading up to World War II, one of the big things that pushed Japan to attack Pearl Harbor was the U.S. cutting them off from oil supplies. you know. And so you got to remember, many wars had to do with economics. And if China started to get squeezed on oil, well, what do you think China would do? I mean, my first guess would be China start invading countries that got oil, try to capture their own oil fields. That'd be my guess. And so if we start poking the bear too much, you're going to start pushing China towards expansionary policies and stuff. Right now, China's just trying to make trade deals with everybody. China's just trying to make an economic powerhouse. But if we were push them into a corner and oil prices went too high, well, I could see China start rolling its armies over across borders and start taking oil fields and shit. So, you know, something to keep an eye on. These things are always bigger than what they tell us, right? When they, we're putting sanctions on Iran because they're supporting terrorism. Bull fucking shit. None of that's true. And if they say it's about human rights, that's even more bullshit. It all comes down to economics. Much bigger picture at play. These dudes trying to play a long game with their empire shit, trying to be the first people to actually conquer the whole world. Because, you know, no one's ever done that, right? Nobody's ever been able to conquer the whole world, and that's what these sociopathic motherfuckers, that's the ultimate prize, right? Whoever can conquer the world first will be remembered forever. And that's what these sociopaths want. I swear that's what they want. Someone wants to be the first guy to conquer the world. And I think, you know, some of these fools in the Project for a New American Century, some of these neocons and shit, they genuinely thought, or they genuinely think still, that the U.S. can conquer the world. I'm telling you right now, it can't. Nobody can conquer the world. In fact, the whole world needs to be unconquered, and everyone just dissolve all these borders, get rid of all the fucking empires, and just let people do their thing. Let people, let culture and shit form organically, stop drawing lines and letting politicians affect it. Because all these politicians do is fuck it up. So yeah, dude, who would benefit from a war in Iran? Well, oil price is going to go up. Saudi Arabia would be a huge benefactor. You blockade Iran, which is probably the first thing the U.S. would try to do. Don't let Iran sell its oil on the market. Iran will get fucked. In the short term, maybe economically, Russia may benefit from it, unless the U.S. starts putting even more sanctions on Russia, where they say, okay, Europe can no longer buy gas from Russia, you know, then Russia would be done too. But who's the largest producer of oil in the world right now? Who just became the largest producer of oil? The United States. Thanks to the fracking and all that stuff going on, all these pipelines and all that shit. The U.S. is the largest producer of oil right now. I don't think we have the biggest reserves, but we have the most production. So the U.S. would benefit from high oil prices. Well, even though the consumer would be paying the bill, you know, when gas prices go up fucking $6 or whatever. What was the highest they went in California last time around with under Bush? They went like really high.
They were like $5,
right? Yeah, $5.
It made me trade my car in, dude, when it hit that.
Yeah.
Yep. I had a V8 and I went to a four banger, dude. I kid you not.
Yep, same here, man. I had a work truck and I couldn't even afford it no more. So the taxpayer pays the bill. And we're going to have to finance all the war and stuff. And, you know, maybe that'll snap them out of it. Maybe that's what made the whole Iraq thing more so unpopular, was that we all got squeezed at the pump. You know, it's a huge tax. You know, in Iraq,
well, you can't get around in SoCal without it. So, I mean, in NorCal, they at least can use the BART if they need to. But, dude, you can't. I mean, unless you're on the trolley line for work and where you live, you're screwed.
Yeah, it's so spread out around here that you really have to have a car. You know, on the East Coast, it's a little different. You know, it's real densely populated and things are closer together. Out here, shit's far apart. So, a lot of economic incentives for these dudes to start their wars. And, you know, the propaganda war has already begun. It's kicking into high gear against Iran. You got Pompeo, the new CIA director, coming out against Iran, the Iran nuclear deal. You got Trump coming out against it. All the neocons are against it. You got Bolton up there against it. You got Netanyahu coming out against it. And the only people really looking like they're having a little bit of sanity on this are the Europeans. Again, because they have that history and they're still fools alive that directly had to deal with World War II. In fact, some of those guys are still alive that fought and saw their whole fucking countryside's destroyed, and their city's bombed out and caught fire. They're still alive, and they're like, nope. And they told their grandkids and their kids, they told them, nope. And if you remember in the most recent strikes, Germany was one of the countries to abstain from supporting it. You know, Germany and Russia took the harshest tolls in World War II as far as destruction and stuff. I mean, if we're not going to count China in on that, you know, Germany and Russia...
China really took it the worst by far, though, for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know what that history has done with China. Has it created a more pacifist sentiment? I mean, at the surface, it seems that way because it hasn't done any outward aggression yet.
Yeah.
But did it also inspire some, you know, sentiment of revenge? Does China want its revenge against Japan? I would assume that they probably...
It's everything they're building up for, and it's why Taiwan's so important, because Taiwan serves as sort of a barrier. But what a lot of people don't know is Taiwan is nuclear-powered. So, I mean, if China did invade, then Taiwan has to respond with nuclear missiles. Like, in other words, the first wave of troops, whoever's invading, they're going to get hit with nukes. Like, they have to be. And Taiwan can't exist. They can't survive even a first wave. So they have to throw everything they have at them. I mean, the toll is going to be ridiculous for China. But I think for them, they're willing to absorb it because that's the end game for them. Their end game is to exact revenge on Japan. I mean, we have our own end game, which was to punish Russia. And, I mean, we punished them into the point where their empire collapsed. And we still kept beating on them. We're still beating on them today. And it's just like, dude, if we turned this shit into production instead of destruction, we'd be off planet a long time ago. It's stupid.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be blowing this fucking planet up. There was a meme I saw the other day, and it said we should stop worrying about who created the planet and start worrying about who's destroying it. You know, it's kind of like a dig at these religious people who, you know, a lot of wars are fought with religious excuses. Now, most times that's bullshit. It's just, again, economics. They pretend it's religious, but it's economics. But, you know, there's no doubt that religion does play a role in getting this kind of nationalistic fervor going where it's, you know, you know, Christian versus Muslim, or, you know, Muslim versus Jew, or, you know, whatever various religions have gone against each other in the past, been done hundreds and hundreds of times. It plays a role. Religion does play a role in convincing, tricking people into going to war and shit, because it's like nationalism. It's like, well, you know, we're Korean and, you know, they're Japanese, you know, so, you know, screw them because of that. And, you know, on that note, though, you got to think that Korea in general also want to get some revenge on Japan, because what Japan did to Korea and you know, leading up to World War II and stuff, that was fucked up shit too. I mean, complete systematic rapes and stuff like that, like really, really bad stuff that Japan did to all of the territories it held, I think, except for Taiwan, actually. Japan actually tried to, I forget the word for it, there's an actual word for when Japan was trying to convert people over to like Japanese tradition. Can't remember. There's a word for it, but I can't remember it. But Japan actually did try. Went easy on Taiwan and tried to turn it into kind of like a mini Tokyo type of situation. But Japan was really rough on the Koreas, really rough on the Manchurian area, really rough on China. So I would assume that all those guys are kind of like, you know what, screw them. So, I don't know, dude. I think those guys, as the power balance shifts over in that direction...
It was worse. Okay, I've done a lot of research on World War II in areas a lot of people wouldn't want to go. And that 731, the Unit 731 was... I mean, it's literally the worst things you can do to people. Like, it's becoming like a demon and creating a hell, dude. A hell on earth for completely innocent, random people. And, a lot of people say, you know, if you research them compare it to like Mengele, it doesn't stack up. Like, it was much worse. It's much worse. So just let your mind go wild with that. I mean, if you really want to research it, you can. And to treat people like they're, I mean, you have to have pure hatred for people to do what they did to them. Much worse than the Nazis and the Jews, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Really nasty stuff, dude. All right. Let's move on here. Israel and Palestine stuff is still going off, and unfortunately, innocent people are...
There's hatred, too. And for what? They're the same... They're literally the same genetically, some of them. They're just on a different side of a wall.
A lot of them are like, you know, there's... here's the funny thing. A lot of Jews and Palestinians are more closely related to other Jews that are also living in Israel. I mean, a lot of these guys are like Eastern European. A lot of these guys are Middle Eastern. A lot of the Jews are Middle Eastern people. They're actually Palestinians that over time wound up becoming Jewish, either through marriage or reproduction or through just cultural shifts or whatever. A lot of the Jews are actually Palestinians genetically, and they just differ by living on another side of a wall and practicing a different religion. And so that continues to be a powder keg. Israel is really getting belligerent, dude. I don't know if it's from because of Trump enabling and or because the Republicans are in power right now. I don't know what it is exactly. Nobody
knows what's going on.
Yeah, or if they just are moving because they genuinely are afraid that Iran is encircling them by, you know, doing what they're doing in Syria. But yesterday and over the night, Iran bombed the shit out of Syria, dude. And the Iranians reported like 200 casualties. They hit a weapons depot, caused a huge explosion. Did you see that? It actually registered like a 2-point something on the Richter scale. Like it caused an earthquake.
Jeez.
Because
I
think they hit a weapons depot, and it was so big that it caused an earthquake.
That is, but I mean, what in the hell did they hit, dude?
Yeah, I don't know, but. And I don't know what kind of weapon they use either. Because
did they,
you know,
like blow up a Moab that was sitting inside of that place? Or, I mean, that's a ridiculous amount.
I'm not sure, dude. I'm not sure. We don't know yet. And Israel isn't taking credit for the strikes, even though everyone in the goddamn world knows they did it. They're just acting like, oh, they're just not addressing it. So they're just leaving it out there as a mystery. But look, Israel is...
I don't know if we'll ever know, will we?
No. Nah. But the fact of the matter is Israel is getting much more brazen, and it's continuously violating international law. I mean, not even considering what they're doing to the Palestinians, what they're doing in Syria by just flying in there whenever the fuck they want and bombing this country, they're flagrantly violating international law. And all of these so-called international organizations like the UN are literally just sitting on their hands not doing shit. I mean, sure, every now and then they'll put out some press release that is like, well, we disapprove of Israel, you know, shooting journalists or whatever. But if these guys had any credibility at all, they would have stepped in and said, you know what? No UN member can sell arms to Israel. No UN member can sell oil or buy oil from Israel. You know, they would actually do stuff like what they did to Cuba, what they do to Venezuela, where they say, okay, we're gonna punish you with sanctions, embargoes, and stuff. Like, Israel is a prime candidate for sanctions and embargoes if the U.S. had a blindfold over its eyes and was actually trying to find justice and liberty in the world. Israel would be right up there with anyone else on the receiving end of U.S. sanctions, but they're not.
Well, we're compromised. We have to be, because we turned a blind eye to the liberty, and that was like some messed up shit. Like, I don't know any other country in the world that just like flagrantly hits another country's ship and then just keeps hitting them even though they know that it's not an enemy ship. Like, it's, yeah, like, okay, like, failed false flag, anyone? I mean,
yeah, was that would they try to blame that on Egypt or something?
Yeah, it's just, it's pathetic, dude, with the painting of the planes, because they give off different radar signature, so really they're just tricking. I mean, it's just like every other false flag. It gets stupid people to mobilize to fight. And it's just like, I just get tired of it, man, and I know you do, but it's like, how do you fix stupid? Like, how do you convince stupid people to not go to war?
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's a good question. Well, we're working on it. We're working on it, dude. And, again, going back to what I was saying at the beginning of the show, maybe part of it before you came back on, the stuff that we have planned on the business end of things for the anti-media, they're going to be big. I think over the next few years, we could establish ourselves as a very, very influential standalone news site that is truly independent in the way that we don't have to rely on Facebook or Google. You know, there's fucking stories that we cover sometimes that we've covered so we can get fucking traffic on Facebook, dude. I mean, I'm not going to lie about it. I'm embarrassed about it, but I'm not ashamed of it because that's, you know, the reality of how this stuff works at the current time. We have to cover dumb stuff every now and then or things that are a little more on the superficial end of things because we also have to make money to pay our bills. And one stupid story can cover five serious stories, you know what I'm saying, for expenses. But, you know,
hey,
hopefully...
Hey, don't blame us. You know, don't blame you or anybody. That's the readers.
Yeah. Too many dumb
if
people.
They would flock to things with meat behind them, then that's all you'd write.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think social media kind of encourages these kind of clickbaity, you know, superficial crap. And I think as people, I think we're starting to come to this point where social media, you know, social media is a bubble, right? Where, you know, I think it's kind of popping right now with the decline of Facebook and the people kind of splitting off and joining other things. I think social media is a bubble, but it's kind of like how the internet was a bubble too. But the internet's still going to be around. It's just going to be different in the future. And I think we're going to see more of a social media ecosystem that's more decentralized and people are spread out across several platforms instead of everyone just being on Facebook, and that's a good thing. And I think as this evolution happens, I think the anti-media, we're going to find our niche as a social news site where we have highly informed readers helping us curate the news and participating in the news, uploading and commenting, submitting links. And I really do think we have a great idea. And I think what went on when we launched the website, the latest incarnation of the website, we launched it like, I want to say like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. We were just ahead of our time. It was too early. And everyone was still caught up. Everyone just wanted to be on Facebook and shit. But now everyone's trying to get off Facebook. And our site's going to be perfectly positioned for people who still want to be, you know, socially sharing the news and stuff, but at the same time don't want to be on Facebook and want to have a little bit more of a, you know, just actually looking for news, not just, you know, Facebook is a passive way to consume the news. You're just relying on some of your friends or some page that you follow to post news that you're going to find interesting. Or you can go to theantimedia.com and you can actually post the links that you find interesting and have them be part of the news cycle, you know. And that's how we're going to try to position ourselves as a halfway meet between social media and a straight-up news website. And I think it's going to hit, dude. I think it's going to hit with all the stuff that we're working on and all the awesome projects that are coming to fruition. We're going to be in a good position here and unfortunately, as things get more messed up, and I'll tell you straight up about this. Look, every time the U.S. does some really stupid shit on foreign policy, when the U.S. bombs Syria, when the U.S. bombs a hospital, you know, when the U.S. does some kind of shit like that, we get more readers on our website. I hate to say it like that, but it's the truth of the matter. And so if things do get messed up, more people are going to read our stuff, and more people will be able to start questioning what's going on. Hopefully, things that, you know, I'm not cheering for shit to get more messed up. But if they do, we'll be in a better position to, you know, deconflict and counter the narratives and stuff like that. You know, we kind of just answer. We answer to these crises. You know, and if you go look on theantimedia.com right now, you'll see a bunch of coverage about the supposed chemical attack in Syria and how everybody, not everybody, but most people that have actually gone to that site now have said, okay, yeah, we don't see any evidence of a chemical attack. And if there is anything here, it doesn't look like the Syrian government was behind it. So we answer to these crises, and that's kind of what we're here for. If everything was perfectly good, if the earth was in harmony and there was peace and there was prosperity and freedom, we wouldn't have a need to exist.
Every single web page would be the dodo.
Yeah, exactly. We are here to counter these crises that are going on and help bring peace to the world. When the world becomes peaceful, you know what? I'll just straight up dissolve this company and say, you know what? we did our job. Time to retire and go live a peaceful life somewhere in abundance, because you don't got to do, you know, we now have a world where it's peaceful and abundant, and we've got robots doing all the hard work, and the human beings get to kind of chill out and do whatever they want, think and create art and music, and all the hard work is done by the robots, and everybody has a place to live and food to eat. You know, once we get to that point, shit, we'll dissolve the anti-media and we'll go retire somewhere nice in Mexico or something, and that'll be it. But until then, as things get more messed up, our voice becomes louder. And so, you know, you guys can always count on us to be there for that and get even stronger, because the world, while we are making progress, we are heading to some dark times, and, you know, the U.S. empire sooner or later is going to fall, and we're going to be there to catch all the pieces and all that stuff. And so it's just going to be a journey, and I keep going at it. And I think, again, going back to this 99% idea, and it goes back to the slogans from the Occupy movement. We are the 99%. 99% of us don't want war. We don't want these assholes stealing money from us. We don't want to be taxed to death. We don't want to see people dying from the cops. We don't want to see mental people being homeless, people with mental illness being homeless. People want things to be nice, but they get tricked into supporting bullshit by these sociopaths trying to take advantage of us. Those times are going to come to an end very soon, thanks to technology. I'd say over the next 50 years, we're going to get to that point. But we've got to go through some rough times for the next 20 years before we can start getting, before we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. The next 20 years are going to be very tumultuous and, you know, unfortunately very violent. You know, technologically induced violence is going to be a big thing over the next 20 years with drone warfare, and you're going to have, you know, drone armies, you know, fucking up whole cities and whole countries and shit like that over the next 20 years. But I think eventually we're going to get to a good point. A utopia type of thing. With the help of these technologies that are right now being used to kill people. But, yeah. What else? Man, a horrible bombing in Afghanistan, being pinned on ISIS, killed 9 journalists, one of the bloodiest days for journalists in a really long time. I mean, Turkey's throwing a whole bunch of them in jail, but they're not, at least they're not killing them. Let's see here, what else do we want? Oh, our editor-in-chief, Kerry Wedler, has a great video out. You guys should go check that out on whatever platform you prefer. Pretty sure she has it on Steemit. About some solutions to these problems. A lot of it, the first thing she talks about is cryptos. You guys know I'm a big fan of cryptocurrencies and stuff, and the market's looking like it's recovering. Good news. But we're not going to get out of these problems by looking at it from the old way. Like, oh, we're just going to vote and Hillary Clinton's going to fix all this shit. Or, you know, Obama's going to fix all this shit for us. That is not going to happen. And goddamn, we should fucking know that by now. Right? Like, dude, how many thousands of years, like literally thousands of years of human beings saying, you know what? We would just vote for that guy and he's going to fix it for us. 2,500 years of that shit failing. And motherfuckers are like, oh, vote Democrat next election. That's going to, you know, solve this problem. Like, dude, Jesus Christ, pull your head out of your ass, dude. Like, it's not working. But we got to relook. We got to take another look. I just saw, I saw something. It was like in San Francisco, and it was an article, and it's like, oh, you know, San Francisco pedestrians have to step over trash on their way to walking to work because the government's not doing its job. Well, the motherfucker picked that shit up. It's on us to pick up the trash. It's on us to clean up our society. It's on us to take care of these problems, not the damn government, because they keep telling us. Thank you all for tuning in. Anti-Media Radio. Peace out. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.